Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to start the show today by talking with you about your retirement. Are you saving enough for your retirement? Our guest, Frank Armstrong, certified financial planner, founder and president of Investor Solutions, Inc. He is the author of a couple of books, The Informed Investor, co-authored Save Your Retirement. So we'll talk about investment and certainly take your questions, and I hope you'll call in. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us, the email address ideas@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Frank Armstrong, welcome back. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Always a big pleasure, Larry, and thanks for the introduction.
Well, I tell you what, it's always great to have you come by. And there's somebody out there who you probably know or at least know about, and that's Richard Thaler, Nobel Prize for Economics just awarded to him, a professor at the University of Chicago. I always thought he did some really cool research and pretty good writer too.
Well, he's one of my heroes, and as you know, he wrote the book co-authored the book called Nudge, that explains a lot of what he's doing in very layman-like terms, so that you get the gist of how important this is to public policy, retirement planning, and a whole host of other economic issues that conflict with the basic idea of that economics started out with, that we're all like little robots and make perfect decisions every time. And it turns out that we're not like little robots, and we have very flawed reasoning, and it leads us down the path to make poor decisions far too often.
Yeah, well, to maybe go out and talk a little more about his theories and what they say about why we don't save for retirement.
Well, you know, people take a lot of shortcuts in their thinking. I'm a boat owner, and hardly a boat owner in this world doesn't believe that his boat is worth far more than anybody else believes it is. and that's something called the endowment effect. If I own it, it's got to be valuable. And then there's loss aversion, which really impacts investors because they hate losing a dollar twice as much as the prospect of earning a single dollar. And so they fail to take appropriate risks in their investment portfolio a lot of times because they have this terrible aversion to loss. And there's things like something called anchoring. If I start off the business a conversation with you saying, well, this is probably a $500,000 project, well, that number gets anchored in your mind. And it might only really be a $100,000 project, but now you're negotiating from $500,000 because that's gotten into your mind. And there's other, you know, there's just a lot of other shortcuts that people take that don't lead them to appropriate conclusions. And Thaler systematically goes through how we make those bad choices or why we make those bad choices. And then he's developed this whole concept of nudging people into making the right decisions, or if they don't make any decision at all, the fault in the program leads them to the correct decision. And that's vitally important to our work with 401ks, for instance, because we want the outcome to be very good for each one of our participants, even if they fail to engage with us on any level. And we can design the pension plan so that that happens, gives them a much better chance of having an okay outcome.
Yeah.
And we have a couple $100 million in pension accounts that we manage for companies, some very small, some very large. And by nudging the participants, we get a much better participation and outcome than we would otherwise.
So you're a pretty good nudger.
Well, we are, and we default. We design plan defaults that lead the employee to make good decisions. For instance, when he comes in and he gets a new job, if, in fact, the employer says, well, listen, we're going to enroll you in the plan, then he just says, okay. Then he says, oh, and by the way, we're going to take 3% of your salary every year and invest it. And then he'll just say, okay. And, oh, by the way, if you don't do anything else, we're going to put it in a plan that's tailored to your age so that you get an okay outcome down the road. And so he'll say, okay. And finally, by the way, every year we're going to increase your contribution from your account for half the amount of your pay raises. And he'll just say, okay. And so the employee never made a choice. He always had the right to say, wait a second, I don't want to be part of this. But he never has to make a choice, and 20, 30 years later, he gets a pretty good outcome. And he's happy, you know. But if in fact, he walks in and they say, well, we've got a pension plan, you don't have to do anything about it now, then he'll say, oh, okay. And he takes that as the employer's recommendation, and he never puts a penny away.
Yeah.
And well, so in the first case, he builds up a really good retirement plan, and he has something at the end of the road.
And we've got Stacy from Appleton on to join us. And Stacy, hold on, we'll be with you in just a second. But you know, what are good resources for helping this person so that maybe they don't have to be nudged along so much?
Well, you know, there's all kinds of information out there, from my books to the retirement outfit in Boston that writes on this every year. There's just insurance companies and investment companies all have information on retirement plans and how to design them and how to make them work. We have 100 different calculators on my website, investorsolutions.com, which will go and allow a person to make reasonable assumptions about rates of return and how much they're going to contribute, and see how much that'll grow to by the end of their working life, and then how much income that'll reliably throw out for them. All kinds of planning material, but people, you know, it's a joke in the industry, but we always say, look, people will spend more time researching a widescreen TV than they will their entire retirement. And it's true.
Yeah,
I mean,
it is.
It wouldn't be funny if it wasn't so true.
Yeah. Frank Armstrong, our guest, the certified financial planner, founder and president of Investor Solutions, Inc., our guest today. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. And Stacy and Appleton, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind today?
Sure. I am going to be moving an IRA from one broker or one financial planner to another, just so that I have it more locally available. The person is in West Bend and it's too far away. And before I set it up with her, she has two different fee schedules. And I'm just wondering which one would be best for my particular situation. She has a commission-based fee, and then she has, well, one's fee-based and one's commission-based. So in other words, one is the percentage and one is transactional. And I'm just wondering which one would be best for me to choose in my situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Stacy. It's a good question. First, we routinely deal with people all over the country and some foreign people, and we're as close as your telephone. And your current advisor may be very very accessible just by picking up the phone and calling them or emailing them. So distance may not be the only reason you want to move. We would always opt for taking a fee-based solution rather than a commission-based solution, because commissions introduce the idea of conflicts of interest that are just not well managed. Let's suppose you came into my office and I was a broker, and you said, listen, I got this $100,000 and I want to buy something safe. Well, okay, the broker's sitting there thinking, a treasury bill or a treasury note. If I do that on $100,000, I make like $75. But on the other hand, if I put them in a deferred annuity, then I can make $6,000. And then he starts thinking $75, $6,000, $75, $6,000. And he can make that annuity stand up on the table and dance.
So even if I'm not going to be doing a lot of transactions, that's still going to be the best way to do it?
Well, I don't know. You know, you pay for advice. You pay for asset allocation. You pay for maybe estate planning or mortgage planning or all kinds of things. And each individual has to look at their own particular situation, what kind of advice they need, what kind of portfolio management they need, and kind of sort out how they trust the advisor, you know, what the experience of the advisor is, how long he's been in business, what are his qualifications, is he a CFP, has he got a degree, and, you know, does he have a criminal record? All those things get sorted into the equation, and then you have to decide, you know, what the relative values are. But as a broad general statement, I keep away from commission-based transactions. We've never done one in this. You know, we've been in this business almost 25 years in this current form, and we've never done a penny's worth of commission. And it's because I don't feel comfortable in an atmosphere with those huge conflicts of interest.
Hmm. There we go. Thank you. Thanks, Stacy. Appreciate your call.
Well, that was helpful, Stacy. You got to sort these things out, and it's a difficult decision.
Yeah. You can join in, too, 1-800-642-1234. Justin on Facebook says he doesn't know how anyone can afford to save anything for retirement these days between student loans and regular cost of living, rent, utilities, food. He doesn't even have enough to purchase health insurance.
It's a terrible problem, but I always tell people who tell me they can't afford to save that somewhere in this world is a guy who makes, or a lady who makes 80% of what you do, and they survive quite nicely. And so if you save 20%, say, of your income, you could adjust the rest of your lifestyle to get there, too. But I understand the student loan problem. It's just a disgrace. I went to a very good public university. I think my last year's tuition was $214 a semester or something. And I graduated without a student loan. It breaks my heart to see these bright kids with student loans. And I think we owe them a better education and opportunity than that. But I don't want to get involved in all politics.
Joanne from Peshtigo wonders, how do you determine if you have enough to retire or what you need to retire?
Well, I think you need to look at a budget, and the closer you are to actually retiring, the more accurate that budget's likely to be. When I was a second lieutenant in the United States Air Force years and years ago, my first full year's pay with flying status was $3,600. And if I had planned my investment around 80% of $3,600 a year, I don't think I'd be very comfortable today. But today, you know, as I approach retirement, I have a pretty good idea what I'm going to need. So you can do a budget. And then you can work backwards and say, okay, if I need X number of dollars and I've got a pile of money that is earning a reasonable percent, I can probably take out 4% per year and sustain that forever. So the math just works out that at 4% withdrawal rate, for every dollar I need per year, I need $25 in my pot. And again, you can go online, find all kinds of calculators that'll make these, you know, child's play to do these calculations, and it's certainly worthwhile, but you have to make the effort to do that. And people, planning for retirement is kind of like doing your taxes without a deadline. Just, you know,
yeah.
A lot of people aren't going to get around to it. It goes to the back of the desk.
Frank Armstrong, our guest today as we talk financial planning for your retirement. I'm Larry Mueller, Jill Nadeau, our producer here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 11:45, we'll be taking a look at what makes a town a great place to live with our guest folk singer Dar Williams. That's at 11:45. Right now, talking financial planning for your retirement with Frank Armstrong, founder and president of Investor Solutions, Inc. And join in, 800-642-1234, the number to call. Mike in Lancaster has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I actually have two questions. The first one is, on all of these retirement calculators, what is a realistic rate of return to plug into those? You know, a lot of them, when you go into them, they come up at 8% rate of return. And, you know, is that really reasonable, or is that being a little too aggressive? So that's my first question.
Let me take that one. I think an 8% return over your working lifetime is pretty realistic if you start off with a high percentage of equities. It's not realistic if you put it all in treasury bills. Now you're looking at 1% return if you're fortunate. But if you have a decent mix between equities or stocks and bonds, 8% is a fair guesstimate.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. My other question I have is, I have a couple of IRAs that I'm about to transfer from one manager to another, and one of the problems I'm running into is where they're currently at, there is a fixed-rate annuity component at 4.5% that I haven't used yet, but that's available, and I can transfer money in and out of it as I'd like to when I get closer to retirement. But if I transfer that money out of those to another manager, I will lose that component. Am I silly to give up a guaranteed 4.5% rate of return come retirement time?
I would say so. We plan on reasonably more than that over the rest of your life. Let's say you had a very conservative portfolio that did 6.5%, and you were retired for 30 years after you pulled the plug on working. That's enormous difference between 4.5% and your 6.5% or whatever those two numbers are over your lifetime. Means you got to put up with a little aggravation as the market goes up and down, but it's always worked before. And I'm a pretty simplistic guy. Some's always worked before. There's no reason to believe that I've got a better solution than some that's worked 100% of the time.
Mm. Awesome. I appreciate your help. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call. Let's go from Mike to Mark in Green Bay. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. I want to do a Roth conversion. My wife and I are both retired. My wife's at the age where she has to do minimum required distributions. And I wonder if there's an algorithm out there that tells you how to maximize the amount that you convert from a regular IRA to a Roth IRA without getting bumped up in a tax bracket, because there are feedback loops that cut into Medicare and Social Security.
Right. That's a reasonably complex calculation. I'm sure you could find some Roth conversion calculators if you just Googled them. But as you say, there are tax and Medicare implications. And if you don't feel really good about sitting down and doing it yourself, you might want to get a financial planner to help you. You don't want to make a mistake with that. And the more you convert each year, the higher your tax bracket goes. So you might want to spread that out over a number of years, or if you're having a really low income year, or you can put yourself in a low income year, then maybe you want to do a bigger chunk.
Yeah, lots to think about there for sure.
Yeah, that's not just a slam dunk. That does have a lot of variables.
Yeah. Good luck, Mark. Thanks.
But Roth conversion is a powerful, powerful thing for the right people.
Yeah. George and Kadat, your turn now. Hi, George.
Hi. I was wondering what your guest feels about long-term health care insurance.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I have it for myself. My wife is considerably younger, and I don't want to be a burden to her. But... you know, at some point, if you're really poor, the government's going to take care of you. If you're really rich, you can self-insure. And since I bought mine, the premiums have gone up rather dramatically. And new policies are not nearly as beneficial as what I got. But it's one of those terrible things where nobody can just tell you you ought to have it or you don't need to have it. You need to look at your financial situation, your health situation. Maybe if your parents and grandparents lived to be 105 and never had a problem, that's one issue. If they all died when they were 55, that's maybe another. The odds are that of a married couple, they're pretty high that at least one of you will have some time in a long-term health care facility. It may not be the rest of your life. You can go into these things and stay a year or 6 months or whatever and then recover and get out. But if you look at the cost of being in one of these facilities for a year, it's pretty high. And if you can self-insure, that's good. If you can't and you're not poor enough for the government to do it for you, then you've got a painful choice to make.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you can play with the deductible period and the total length of time that you would be covered to get something that's halfway reasonable. For instance, instead of lifetime coverage, maybe 5 years would be enough, because most people are either going to die or recover within 5 years. And if you can afford the first 180 days of being disabled, but you want to insure yourself against a much longer term disability, you can adjust that waiting period, and you can adjust the amount of coverage from, say, $1,000 a week to $3,000 a week, and of course the premiums will vary as a result of that. So those are issues you can wade through as a family with a financial planner. And make those trade-offs.
Yeah, interesting.
It's another tough choice. You guys are asking tough questions today.
Thank you, George.
Thank you.
Those are good questions.
Yeah.
Those are, but they're not slam dunk. It's not like I could say, do this or don't do this.
Yeah. Frank Armstrong, our guest today. If you want to join in, by the way, you can. We've got open lines for you at 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Give a call. John in Port Wing said his wife has about $75,000 in a TSA moderate risk fund, but would like to move it to a low risk investment that still qualifies as an IRA, but produces more than 1%. Any suggestions there?
Well, you got to get real. If your rate of return forecast is directly determined by how much investment risk you're willing to take, and obviously if you're not willing to take any, then 1% is where you're going to be right now. I mean, the entire world's central banks are flooding the world with currency and deliberately driving down interest rates, and so there you are. On the other hand, the rates of return over the long haul in the equity market have been quite robust, but you got to put up with the aggravation of it going up and down. And we saw that most recently in 2008, where nobody enjoyed the ride then, but people who stayed invested are much better off today than they were even before the crash. But it takes an amount of faith and courage. And loss aversion, we were talking about earlier in the show, comes into play, because people will not necessarily make entirely rational choices around the question of how much risk they should take.
We have other callers coming on board. Again, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. This whole business about being hesitant to invest in the market because of its volatility, what more can you say to those people than what you just said?
Well, it depends on where you are in your stage of life. I mean, I'm 73 now, and 2008 was 10 years ago, and I got pounded. I'm almost 100% equities all the time, because I don't forecast any need for any money this quarter that I'm not going to earn from my business. So. But you know what? I didn't need the money, so I figured it's coming back, and in fact, it did. And I've been in this business now for 43 years. I was here for the crash of 87, another crash in 89, the dot-com fiasco in 2000, and most recently 2008. And had I pulled out or not invested, I would have a tiny fraction of my net worth today. But, you know, it's a matter of you've got to get comfortable that it's going to go up and down, but that it's always worked before.
Yeah. Eric in Milwaukee has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Eric. Thank you for calling.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, I have a question for you. Here's the situation. My wife is, in 2 years, going to turn 55. She's been with the company 35 years. They're offering her half the pension at half her pension if she takes it at 55. The problem we have is that if she works another, after the 35 years, there's no advantage for her to keep working for the company. And I have two questions. How do you know, can you work after that, after you get your pension from one company and go to another one? And second of all, you know, how do you figure out whether there's an advantage to stay with the company or not?
Yes, you can retire from one company and go to work for somebody else and just roll the money into an IRA. That's simple. But if this is a regular pension, like we had in the old days, retiring early carries with it a huge penalty. And so you can say, okay, if I retire at 55, here's what I'm going to get. If I retire now at 65, I will have 10 more years in the formula. My final average compensation will probably be higher, and actuarially I'll have 10 fewer years to live, and so my payout should be dramatically higher. It's just like the Social Security question. Everybody says, should I retire at 62? I think the normal retirement age ought to be 70, because it's 50% more per year for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
Well, here's the thing. We're looking at $3,000 a month if she takes it at 55. If she waits till she's 65, she gets $6,000.
Well, those are just the numbers we were talking about.
Yeah, so I'm trying to figure out. But I would think that my problem with it is, like I said, if you don't make 67, how are you ahead? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, because there's a death benefit to this. You can have a joint one-half survivor annuity or some other form of annuity that protects the spouse. And in every case, 1 year longer is a higher benefit.
Yeah.
Okay, so you think she should stay even though they don't increase the pension anymore? I mean,
I think we just said that it's going to double from $3,000 to $6,000.
Correct, because there's a half a penalty, but there's 10 years. 10 years you're getting paid. Do you?
Sure, and so, you know, if she likes her job, and she's getting paid fairly there, then and they don't mess around and terminate the pension plan, she's got every incentive to stay. On the other hand, if she works for an ogre, and she's getting far less money than she could get at another company, then maybe that's another personal choice.
Yeah, there's a lot to balance there, isn't there? But that extra doubling of your monthly income by staying 10 years is pretty attractive in a lot of ways.
That's pretty attractive, and that's a guarantee that a financial investment advisor like myself can't give you. You know, that's a pretty neat thing, saying, okay, 10 years and you're going to double your money for the rest of your life? Come on.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah. But if you don't like your job.
Yeah, right. I mean, if you hate going to work, and, you know, you hate the people you work with and you don't think you're providing any kind of legacy service that you can be proud of, all those are issues that come into play. You know, if now, with your $3,000 a month, you can take this job and shove it.
Yeah.
To quote Dolly Parton. And and go do something else that you think is more valuable.
Yeah. Or, and, you know, and you're still drawing your $3,000 a month, and then if you've got your new income and it's comparable or even better than the other income, you're making more money that way, too.
Yeah, and actually, you don't have to take the $3,000 a month. You can just say, okay, I'm going to retire now, and I'll call you in 10 years when I want the money to start to flow. And instead of $6,000, it might be $5,000. But you, in the meantime, you've got another income to live on.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You're building up another retirement plan. So there's a lot of things you can do around that planning issue. And again, if you sit down with a good financial planner, somebody that's a CFP and worked through these problems before, you probably get some good advice and some good insight.
Yeah, yeah. Good luck with that, Eric. Appreciate your call. I want to give Jim in Marshfield a chance to join us. Jim, your turn. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi. Great show. I was wondering, Frank, when you get that pamphlet about 3 months before your birthday, they Social Security sends it to your house, you know, once every 3 years or so, and it says if you retire at 62, this is what you'll get. If you retire at 67, that's what you'll get. But the operative word in there is if you keep working. What if a person retires, let's say, at 62, and they're going to get, let's say, $1,500 a month, but they live off their investments and they don't take Social Security until 67. That your benefit does not continue to grow. At
Oh, sure it does. And that's similar to the situation I faced. I could have retired at 62 and taken mine, but between 65 and 70, it goes up 40%. Per year guaranteed. And so I just kept on working, and because I didn't start to take it, it just goes up 8% per year guaranteed. And
okay.
I don't know of any other guaranteed 8% out there.
Right. There's not. Right. You're right on that. I have a follow-up question to that that's
sure.
really scary. And nobody, whether you're Republican or Democrat, nobody is talking about this. It's an article I read about 30 years ago in a magazine, and now Dave Brat, the congressman, Republican congressman from Virginia, brought this up on Laura Ingraham's show about a year ago. He said that this law was passed about 30 years ago where everyone's Social Security within the next 15 years they already passed it, but nobody talks about it. It's going to be cut 20%. And it was the law that was passed like at 3 o'clock in the morning by Congress 30 years ago. And nobody's talking about it because they don't want to take the blame for it because, like I said, it was passed 30 years ago. Do you know anything about this?
No, I would question that. I think you could probably Google that, but I've been in this business a long, long time. I've never heard anything like that. You know, the Social Security is the third rail of American politics. Anybody who allowed a retiree's benefits to be cut could say goodbye to his little seat in Congress forever. So that if, in fact, there were that kind of draconian law circulating around and it looked like it might go into effect, I would be really surprised if they didn't reverse it before it happened to anybody.
Yeah, I would
think. I can't figure out Congress and what they're doing up there today. You know, everybody's imperiled when Congress is in session. But the congressman would be imperiled if they cut anybody's Social Security benefit. Now, they may not let it rise above what it is today, and they may charge you more to get that benefit or some other, but cutting somebody's benefit that's retired, the pitchforks would come out and the loops would be hanging on across trees. That just wouldn't fly.
There we go, Jim. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Someone else wonders if you only have a small amount. Say you got a few thousand dollars. What would you do with that?
I'd take it to Vanguard and talk to them. I don't have any relationship with Vanguard. We do use their products. We think if anybody on Wall Street has the has the right to wear a white hat. It's Vanguard, and their products are superior. Their costs are dirt cheap, and they now have some people who can help you plan. For small, I mean, if you can't afford with a tiny amount of money to employ a financial advisor, Vanguard is where I would go.
Yeah, it's, you've talked about Vanguard in the past, and it really does. It sounds like.
Well, there are some other good options. You can use Schwab's exchange traded funds or index funds. You can use Fidelity's index funds. You know, there are a lot of good low cost options, but you know. And we use both Schwab and Fidelity, you know, we have a very high opinion of them both, and I think Schwab's are even cheaper than Vanguard's today. At least that's what they're advertising. And, you know, there's a lot of good choices out there if you do a little research and choose wisely. But those are the three places I would start, because they have very low price product. It's exceptionally good quality, but you do have to pick and choose because they had a lot of other garbage that you probably don't want to have.
Yeah, you be careful about. Well, it all goes back to actually doing your work, like
doing
you would
your
if,
homework,
like
doing
you would if
homework.
You were buying a new TV.
That's right. Spend as much time on that investment decision as you would on your widescreen TV.
Frank, it's always fun talking with you. Your Investor Solutions, Inc. Website, I like that website because there is a lot of good information out there, and you certainly have it on your site, too.
Well, thank you. We've probably got 1,000 articles that are relevant to solving the investment question today, and you know, it's a good resource for people who want to spend some time there. We think calculators are a good resource. But there's a wealth of good information. And the fact is, like the Nike ads, it's just do it.
Just do it. Frank, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Larry. It's always a joy.
Frank Armstrong is a certified financial planner, founder and president of Investor Solutions, Inc. He's the author of the book, The Informed Investor, and co-author of Save Your Retirement. Always fun talking with him, and we will have him back, and we will do this all over again with him. Coming up, we're going to take a look at what makes a town great, a great place to live and visit. Our guest, folk singer Dar Williams, next on the Ideas Network.